This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Acres of talcum powder in the raw. Enough to take the shine off 100,000 babies. It looks like marble, but is so light that large chunks can be easily handled. And tons of it are shipped east every year.
In the early 1930s, talc, which is a mineral, a natural substance found deep in the ground, was being mined in places like Oregon, America. This grainy, black-and-white pathé footage doesn't just show miners, though.
Being right on the spot, the girls take a big supply in hand, using the same stuff to shine up silver that takes the shine off their noses.
That raw talc was the main ingredient of talcum powder, which was marketed to women as a cosmetic product to dust on their faces and on their babies' bottoms.
Ever since I was a little girl, Johnson's baby powder has made me feel soft, fresh, and loved.
From the start of your life, it's been a part of...
By the 1970s, one company had the lion's share of the market, Johnson & Johnson. They owned their own talc mines, and their sweet-smelling, pink-labelled product was in bathroom cabinets around the world.
Johnson's baby powder is a feeling you never outgrow.
Women were encouraged to dust talcum powder on their genitals too. As one advert said, your body perspires in more places than just under your arms. Women were even sprinkling talcum powder on their sanitary towels and female condoms. But a crisis loomed on the horizon. A researcher in a lab in New York was examining talcum powder and found something worrying. He started finding deadly asbestos fibres mixed in with the finely milled talc. How would industry respond? From BBC Radio 4, this is How They Made Us Doubt Everything, Series 2, Talc Tales. I'm Phoebe Keane, and I've been investigating the tactics industries can use to delay regulation and cast doubt over science. Episode 2, Never 100% Clean.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's rock and roll, as we say.
Meet Arthur Langer. These days he's retired, but back in the 1970s, he was working as a mineralogist at a lab at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. It was around this time that researchers all around the world were noticing patterns of deaths amongst people working at ports, dockyards and factories, and following the trail back to asbestos. Arthur Langer was doing some pretty grim research.
3,000 autopsies in New York City, and tissues were removed from both lungs.
He was looking for asbestos fibres in the lungs of people who had recently died. One breakthrough in technology came along that would change his investigations, a brand new type of microscope, an electron microscope.
This translates into magnification, increasing from several hundred times to tens of thousands of times. You can see individual fibres. And so this new world opened for me.
Looking into this new world of tiny individual asbestos fibres for the first time, Arthur noticed something surprising in the lung tissue.
We have people in the general population have what appears to be asbestos bodies in their tissues. People who were not asbestos workers, they were just people living their lives. And the question is, where's this stuff coming from?
Arthur set about investigating.
Well, we considered talc or talcum products.
Both talc and asbestos are naturally occurring minerals that are often found together in the ground. They're both formed under similar conditions, and they're both made of the same chemical elements. So if you have talc in the earth, you could have asbestos too.
What determines asbestos?
The ability of the mineral found in nature to occur as many fibers together, so that visualizing the mineral in your hand, you could actually, between the thumb and forefinger, you could break apart the bundle of fibers and continue to disaggregate the bundle of fibers into particles that are too fine to be resolved by the naked eye.
Those fibers that you can't see, they're the problem. That's because the spiky shape causes damage to our bodies.
The very thin fibers is able to remain airborne, is easily inhaled. The thin particles are able to penetrate and travel deep into the lung. And it ends at the site of which the disease mesothelioma is known to originate.
So Arthur asked his colleagues to bring in their tins of talcum powder they had in their bathroom cabinets so he could test them. He wondered if they could still contain some asbestos fibres despite the talc having been mined, milled and processed. It wasn't great news. In 1976, the New York Times ran with the story, saying 10 out of 19 body and baby powders tested here were contaminated with asbestos fibres. In three of the products, the quantities ranged from 8 to 20% asbestos fibres.
The labels on the canisters did not accurately reflect what was in the canisters.
Wow.
Yeah, this was incredible.
What was the response like to that research?
Oh, God. If I considered the response, I would not have published the information. What do you think of that?
What do you mean?
There was one trustee that was interested in what in hell I was saying and what I was basing it on. And he went to the dean of the medical school, and the dean of the medical school called me, and he wished to know what I was basing my information on.
Were you in trouble a bit then with your boss, effectively?
Was I in trouble? Oh, God almighty. No comment. No. They just made life uncomfortable and... Well, there's always repercussions.
Arthur wasn't just in trouble at work. His findings didn't go down well at Johnson & Johnson headquarters either. In an internal company memo, their head of medical affairs wrote of his concerns.
I've got this memo in front of me from Johnson & Johnson, and your name is on a list of antagonistic personalities carrying out an attack on talc.
Look, I'm laughing now. Yeah. What's there to say? Well, yeah, that's true. I was making their lives difficult. They had to explain. They had to explain and defend without data. So they attacked people personally.
When I put this to Johnson & Johnson, it said it immediately investigated Arthur Langer's findings and sent their talc to several independent labs and performed its own tests. Each independently concluded that there was no contamination. What's surprising about this turn of events is that Arthur had actually worked for Johnson & Johnson a few years earlier. In 1971, Johnson & Johnson had been alerted to the fact that a researcher in Cardiff, Wales, had found something unusual in an ovarian cancer tumour, talc particles. Johnson & Johnson flew to the lab in Cardiff to meet the scientists and obtained the sample. They brought it back to the US and asked Arthur to retest it to see if the researchers in Wales were right.
I found particles that were morphologically talc.
Not only did he find talc in their cancer tissue, he also found something else.
I believe we found fragments of chrysotile.
And what was their response?
Thank you very much for the information. Goodbye and good luck. I mean, it's basically that.
Those weren't their exact words. When he told them he'd found asbestos in the cancer tissue and some asbestos in their talcum powder, they actually wrote back,
"We're, of course, somewhat surprised to learn that you have found chrysotile asbestos, as other independent workers have not so far reported such findings to us."
But that wasn't the whole truth. Internal company memos reveal that behind closed doors, Johnson & Johnson had been finding asbestos in their talc supply. Just a few years previously, in 1969, their head of talc supply raised concerns. He asked the medical team how they should deal with the fact that tremolite, an asbestos mineral, was often found in talc.
"Pete, we have to firm up the position the company should have on the presence of the mineral tremolite in talc. We've moved into high gear on some alternate talc sources, and it's normal to find different levels of tremolite in many U.S. talcs. Historically, in our company, tremolite has been bad. Some varieties of it match asbestos. The question is, how bad is tremolite medically, and how much of it can safely be in a talc base we might develop?"
The reply from their medical team came back,
"It would seem to be prudent to limit any possible content of tremolite in our powder formulations to an absolute minimum. If it became known that our talc formulations contained any significant amount of tremolite, it is not inconceivable that we could become involved in litigation in which pulmonary fibrosis or other changes might be rightfully or wrongfully attributed to inhalation of our powder formulations."
Johnson & Johnson say the talc referred to here was not for inclusion in Johnson's baby powder. It said it was careful in mining and selecting the talcum used in the products it sold to consumers. But over the next few years, Johnson & Johnson had three independent labs test more of their talc.
"The chrysotile asbestos does exist."
They all found asbestos fibres. One even said the count was rather high. In 1973, Johnson & Johnson's head of research was sent to their Vermont mining operation and reported back that they'd found tremolite asbestos.
"These talcs contain widely varying amounts of tremolite. Subtrace quantities of tremolite or actinolite are identifiable, and these might be classified as asbestos fiber. It should be cautioned, however, that no final product will ever be made which will be totally free from respirable particles. We're talking about a significant reduction, but not 100% cleanup."
Huh. Never totally free from respirable particles. They're the small pointy fibres that can cause damage inside our bodies. So from these memos, it seems Johnson & Johnson had been discussing the issue of asbestos contamination in their talc. When I put this to them, they told me one of these tests did show less than 0.01% asbestos in the material, but that the testing was hectic and the findings couldn't be replicated. They said,
"Allegations that our talc could pose harm to consumers is a concern that Johnson & Johnson took very seriously throughout the entire history of our sale of Johnson's baby powder. Johnson & Johnson regularly worked directly with independent institutions, laboratories, and universities to test our talc. Time and again, the independent testing proved that Johnson's baby powder was free of asbestos."
But soon, the US regulators would start investigating the issue of asbestos contamination in talc. What would they find? How They Made Us Doubt Everything, Series 2, Talc Tales, was produced and presented by me, Phoebe Keane. The editor was Matt Willis, and it was mixed by James Beard.